Okay. So, John.
Darren.
Yeah. Apparently, today, we're going to talk about a little bit of your homework. You've got a little bit of stuff to talk about for something that you're going to be doing, and it seemed like a good topic to talk to everybody about.
Well, and it's kind of what our whole podcast, I think, is kind of about.
Cool.
So that's what I want to get in. I want to talk about the connection between farmers and chefs.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
How important that is.
Right. Like, I think I can think of years, entire year-long stretches where we just talked to farmers and chefs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty evident where this show really shone.
Why is it so important that a chef has a farmer? Why is it so important that a farmer has a chef?
Like, absolutely.
It's what we're all about.
So. Well, that's fantastic. So we're going to dig right into this.
Let's dig right into that.
Where do we start?
Oh, geez, that's what has been turning in my head for the last little while. Like, and
yeah.
When I was like, you know what, we haven't recorded for a while. We need to get back in this, and that's why I think we're starting on another season of this.
Yeah,
I really wanted to start picking our brains and get going, and this just seemed like the ultimate way to start off again.
Yeah, it does. It seems like a good kickstart for us.
Yeah, because I know we both love talking about this. Maybe we just like hearing our own voices. But you know what? Like, the food is so important to me, and you know, like,
for sure.
You know, like, it's one of the most important things in my life, next to
absolutely
my family and child and all those other things. But you know, like, it's providing for them, which is what really connects me to it. And I've developed a career around cooking and making food for people and trying to make people happy. So for me, you know, I can't exist without having a farmer.
Yeah.
You know, like, and
yeah.
And being able to know where my food is just seems like such an incredible thing to be able to do, right?
So. Absolutely. So, I mean, I guess we're talking about it in, I don't know how to phrase it, but you don't just have a farmer. You have multiple farmers.
Yeah.
Maybe that some are growing some things that others aren't. Maybe some produce more volume or pricing. Like, let's start there. What, as a chef or as a person, what draws you to a farmer?
Well, you know what? I'm going to come back with a little story here.
Okay.
Because this is kind of like what drew me to the, well, like, I started my cooking career here in town growing up in the Comox Valley.
Right.
You know, it was always part of, I grew up on the beach, right?
Yeah.
So picking oysters. I mean, I've told the story 100 times, you know, getting really into my food. And it was always, we always had a garden. We always had food going. So I always got to use fresh food. And then I moved down the island to Victoria, which is amazing because there's all these fancy restaurants, you know, like a little higher end restaurants.
Right.
And, you know, some very talented chefs down there who are doing some incredible food. And as I was working there, I realized all the food that I was getting was coming from the Comox Valley, my home.
Isn't that the way, though? Like, yeah, you've got all these amazing chefs, and they're getting in Victoria, say, or my experience, a bit of in Victoria, a bit of Vancouver, elsewhere.
Yeah.
And they get excited about product. I'm like, what? That's from down the... I know these people. Like, that's 3 blocks away from where I used to live, or...
Exactly. So for me, all of a sudden, this was like, oh... What am I doing here? It's time for me to head home, you know?
Like,
and I got an amazing opportunity to run a restaurant that I didn't think I'd ever have a chance at it. And I was like, I jumped on it, right? So,
and if I may add, you did a stellar job. You had an impeccable run for the 13 years,
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I just showed up every day and just did my best. And and that was such a great opportunity because it gave me the ability to connect with even more people and get a little further into the community to actually meet the people that were making the food.
Right. Which is really where this podcast stemmed from.
Yeah, exactly. Because that was like...
You had these great conversations with these great people, and you're like, I got to record this.
I got to share this. Like, and people don't understand. And that's what it was like. It was like... You know, like, you can make food in huge volumes and ship it around, but I mean, the key is that food is designed in big fields to be shipped.
Yeah.
And it's not really designed for flavor, right? So that was something that always kind of confused me, because it's like, yeah, you can have the perfect, beautiful tomato, but it tastes like cardboard, you know? Right. Like, whereas you can go into a farmer's field and pick a tomato and just like bite into it, and it's just beautiful, juicy, flavorful.
Right.
You know?
We're talking more like the sort of the large scale agriculture versus sort of your local farm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And so as a chef, I always thought it's our job to make the best food we can possibly, or the tastiest food we can with the ingredients we have.
Absolutely.
So
I think a lot of chefs endeavor that. Yeah. Like to get to that point where...
Well, and I hate to say, no matter what happens, I mean, what a chef wants is for someone just to go, wow, that was amazing.
Yeah,
at absolutely. The end of the day, that's all people care about. They're like, wow, thank you so much for making that incredible meal. That touches me more than I think anything. Like someone just coming over and saying, excuse me, but that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be from anything, like just making a simple soup.
Yeah.
You know, someone's like, wow, it's so astounding. And I'm like, well, thanks. You know,
right.
I use this and this and this. And that's where I like to do, because all of a sudden food means so much more when there's a story to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, right. I mean, if their ultimate goal is to have an appreciation of their craft, an appreciation of their food, of their wares, of what they're putting out. Mm-hmm. If that's the chef's ultimate goal, so then the chef is going to want the best ingredients or ingredients that they may, I mean, let's think of this in terms of art, maybe styles or colors or whatever that they're not necessarily always using, but they see it there available to them and they're like, oh, I got to try this. I know how to work this in. Mm-hmm. And so that's where a relationship with a farmer versus say a distributor becomes important, because a distributor can just deliver what you want, whereas a farmer is going to have more interaction with you. You're going to start a relationship.
Yeah.
They're going to understand what things you're looking for, what things you're open to trying, and such. Whereas, and I'm not calling out any distributors. I'm just saying it's a crapshoot there. You might get somebody that starts to figure you out. You might not.
Yeah. Well, and there's a dynamic there, you know,
like,
food has a life.
Yeah.
And it has a waste. And it's like being able to combine those both, you know, it's amazing that it's astonishing. If we were to go into food systems is something I think we're going to have to approach on one day, because, you know, it's a huge demand to be able to get food from one point to another. Mm-hmm. But if you can shorten that trip by using the farmer and using the chef together, I mean, all of a sudden you can create new markets. And also, you know, like, farmers know what they can grow.
Yeah.
And farmers like to, I guess maybe what I like is people who have passion.
Right.
And I like seeing those farmers that have that passion behind their food, and they're out there in the field and they're like making something and they're like watching how it grows. And they're like, oh, if I change this, if I plant it at this time, I get a nicer product. And if I clean it this way and serve it this way, you know, like, and give it to a chef.
So do you feel, as a chef, do you feel that when you receive something, say, from a farmer, that you've been entrusted with something sort of maybe a little more special than you would have just got if a delivery showed up? Like, I've now been entrusted with something this guy or this lady put so much into, I got to make this into the best thing it can be.
Well, that's it. You know, like, there's two senses too. Like, first of all, you have a selling feature.
Right.
Right. You have a story.
Right.
To go along with it. So you're taking something. But then, you know what? Like, you can also say that the person put the passion behind to bring it to you to get to this point. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it's a neat dynamic to be able to work with chefs, and
very rewarding, very satisfying.
Yeah, and there's so many little details that you can go through to get to that one point, right? So
yeah.
I was trying to think. I've got all these notes here, and now
I remember seeing you jotting down a few notes. I think that we were talking about when we sort of prefaced the show. I think you want to talk about the life of the product. We sort of covered flavor.
Right. Well,
do you want to go more into flavor?
Well, I just love flavor and taste, right?
Yeah.
Like, those are two of my favorite things. Like, just being able to connect. And then I want to kind of look back too, is like, as you were saying, like, waste and life of a product, right?
Right.
How much product do you have and how much time do you have?
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, as in, it tastes great and and it's sweet, but it only has a shorter shelf life because it hasn't been designed to to last long out there.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe I'll put a pin in that, but I saw a statistic last night that we waste 1.4 kilograms of food per person per day in North America. And you might think, there is no way. Like, I discarded this, or I only got rid of that. But we're talking per person, not per household.
Mm-hmm.
There's restaurants. There are, the grocery stores. We'll get into this when we get into waste.
Yes.
But, okay.
No. And, you know, like, availability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a huge thing, because it's really hard to write a menu, create a menu, and then be like, because someone came in here, here's some zucchini.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm going to throw that on my menu. And then, of course, it takes a couple weeks. You go to the printers, you get all this up, set up there, and then you go, I have zucchini on my menu. And I don't know why I'm using zucchini, because it's like...
It's actually a little hardier. It'll be around a little longer. But yeah, I know
what you mean. But you know where I'm going with this. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, I have no more zucchini.
Right.
So now where are you at?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're back to the...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's touch on flavor and tastes. Let's talk about... Those two seem to go hand in hand. I think that we covered them a bit. But like, first off, the distinction between the two. I mean, somebody might say, oh, this tastes great. It's got great flavor. And say, well, what's the difference? Well, flavor is more the depth of the food, what it can do, what it can be, whereas what somebody tastes is sort of how they take that in, there is a distinction.
Yeah, well, actually, I have an interesting one. And I know we've been talking about vegetables here for a bit, but I ran into a friend and we started he's growing some chickens.
Okay.
And I got a couple chickens off him and he turned to me and he said, I really need you to tell me what you think about these.
Okay.
He's like, because it's my goal as a farmer to make the best tasting chicken you've ever had. You know, like that's what I want. That is my goal.
Sure, of course.
And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'm like, so what makes your chicken taste better? And he's like, well, that's what I'm working on. And I'm trying different things to be able to make that chicken taste amazing.
So is this in while the animal's being raised, or is this after the animal's been...
Well, this is while the animal's being raised.
Okay.
So now he's taking into consideration his feed.
Of course.
You know, what's it going to taste like?
Right.
You know, like, what's he going to... Is it sustainable? And the next thing is, how much room does this chicken have to move?
Right.
You know, and if it moves more, is it going to be taste better?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it going to be fatter? And so there's that balance between having a big, huge, fat chicken...
Right.
...that tastes gross.
Right.
You know, this lean, chewy chicken that runs around too much. So just finding that balancing act of where that flavor and how to keep that chicken in the best flavor range it can be.
Right.
And so a lot of it's like trying to figure out, what do you play with? What do you feed the chicken with? And that's something as a chef, it's not necessarily in my thoughts. I'm like, I'm thinking about, what do I season that chicken with to get the most flavor out of it?
Right.
Whereas, you know, chicken, a lot of people have a flavor for chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know what their chicken tastes like and they want it to taste like this. And that's because we feed it heavy corn, heavy this, heavy that.
Right.
And all the major, poultry farmers feed close to the same.
Right.
But he's like, if I take this outside of there and I start, you know, move it around every twice a day, so that they get fresh bugs and different things to eat on, is that going to make the chicken taste better, or is it going to give it a different flavor?
Right, interesting.
So I'm sort of looking at that like that's the whole dynamic around flavor, and that can transfer to anything, like creating your menu around the flavor of this chicken, you know? Like, is this something that you add something to bring out that extra flavor in it, or is it something you don't need to do much to because the flavor is already within the meat itself?
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then not only that, but then if you've got a unique enough product that you're working with, but then you're sort of beholden to keep using that product if you've designed a menu to incorporate that.
Incorporate that, yeah. So, yeah, it's a little bit more pricey, but you're taking a lot more time and consideration into what you're producing.
Right.
As he says, you know, I'm not going to make money selling these chickens.
Mm.
He's like, I'm going to cover the cost of these chickens, but it's just because I want to make a really good chicken and I want it. And it, he's not doing it on a huge scale. He's doing it for his friends and the people he knows.
Right.
And luckily I got into that friend list. So he's
I know. I saw both of them today sitting there. It's like, those things are huge.
Yeah. And I'm kind of really excited because I got a nice dinner coming up that I'm going to do something really fun with them. And
yeah,
we'll see how it all comes off. So
great.
So that's what I like thinking about flavor. And so, and that dynamic comes out in so many other ways. Like, I don't know. The one that always gets me is when I go to the grocery store and I buy parsley.
Oh yeah.
And I grab it and I smell it and I'm like,
yeah. You know, it's funny smelling, like my daughter and my son, on different occasions, my daughter most recently, but she picked up a watermelon and she's like, I don't know how to tell a good one. And I was like, well, in all produce, and I took it as a moment to say, I'm like,
yeah,
in all produce, the first thing you need to do, aside from visually identifying that it looks good, pick it up and smell it. That's the next step with everything. It doesn't, and not just watermelon, like every vegetable. And if you can't pick up some of that smell,
exactly,
it's not a great product. It's underdeveloped. It's been sitting somewhere, picked early, you know. And we went from there. But yeah, smell is such a huge part.
Just getting that aroma, and that's going to transfer into all your dishes and all that flavor, right? And
so absolutely,
having a farmer who's going to take the time to try to incorporate extra flavor into his product, that's what you want, right?
So, absolutely.
And then tasting, right? Like, I must admit, from the ice cream shop, what I've learned is taste. Mm-hmm. You see this little belly I'm developing?
I was going to comment the other way. I am surprised that you're a year and somewhat in.
Right.
And the amount of tasting you do every day, that because you need to, because you're doing everything on the fly. Everything you're creating is something you're creating right there.
Yeah.
Like, it's not something that you have figured out, you've got a recipe for. You're in that process of recipe. You're building your catalog right now.
Well, and it's not even just building the catalog, but it's like bringing in the fruit. So I'm bringing in like blackberries, and I'm like, I've found the beginning of the season, they're a little bit more tart, and it's maybe because they haven't ripened enough. Or if it rained too much, then they're not as much juice in them. So they're a little bit stronger in flavor. So just taking that and just playing with that is really quite interesting for me, because I know I've got to taste everything. So it's like, how much? So maybe I have to put an extra pound of something into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, in the next batch, I have to take another half of it, a little bit less. Or is it, how much sugar do I put in there?
Right.
Because that really depends on the consistency of your product anyways. And if you're using adding fruit and that's really sweet and strong natural sugars.
Right.
You know,
see, I don't think a lot of people understand that when they're, you know, there are quite a few people I've been in to help you out or help the staffing concerns or whatever a few times here and there. And I think a lot of people don't understand that the sugar isn't necessarily there to make it taste better, though you can mitigate it so that you're getting the good taste.
Yeah.
But the sugar has a lot to do with the consistency. And like, otherwise, some of the ice cream would just be a frozen block.
Oh, exactly.
And you wouldn't be able to get anything out of it. Like, there needs to be a certain amount of sugar just to keep it.
To keep that freezing point down to make it not a block. As in, I had someone throw a whole tub of yogurt in the ice cream machine.
Oh, no.
Instead of one that I had mixed a pre-made batch with sugar and everything mixed in there. And, of course, I pulled it out and I'm like, thump, thump, thump. That's a solid brick. No. That's not going to work ever.
Oh, no. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But to bring it back, you were saying the amount of tasting that you need to do, and you're like, you know, motioning towards you're getting a bit of a belly. You're like I said, I think the opposite. I'm surprised you haven't.
Well, thank you.
I mean, the amount that you got to try out, because you're constantly, you know, writing new recipes right now.
Right, and sampling and playing around with that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the great things that, you know, a chef gets to be able to take the product, but the farmer brings it to you and gives you that point of, hey, these are the products that I have. And, you know, they're looking for the ripeness and when it's ready. So,
yeah,
you know, that's one of the big points of it. And you know what?
Right.
Like, yeah. So taste.
So when we talk about large scale agriculture, that's bringing you, and I have no need to like slam everybody, but we this episode is about talking about the difference of why you would need a farmer. Mm-hmm. So you talk about large scale agriculture, and most groceries have at least some, if not most, of their product coming from that those larger methods. Mm-hmm. And they like generally they are either manipulating the food to be at a certain visual appeal,
right?
Or they're picking it early so it has a longer shelf life, but then doesn't get to develop the flavor that we are looking for. The texture might be a little off, again, because it was picked early, so that it could exist in that long trek to get to that grocery store, to what have you. And even though modern science has mitigated it or controlled it so that it's in a truck for the least amount of time, it's at the perfect temperature, it's at this, it's still not that local product that was allowed to fully mature and develop, because the farmer or the person who raised it knew that it was going to be in the person that was going to, the end consumer, they knew it was going to be in their hand in days.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a huge difference on what you can get out of that vegetable or that fruit or yeah. that chicken.
Well, and you know what? Like, it's just amazing that we have, like, even the big scale, that there's people actually doing this work.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. we should all go out there and thank a farmer, because without them, none of us would have anything. Right.
Like, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, what would we think about your hamburger? Yeah. How many different steps and how many different places that product has to go through just to get to you?
Yeah.
How many different farmers, how many different, like, we're talking tomatoes, mm-hmm. we're talking beef, we're talking wheat for the flour, mm-hmm. Eggs for your condiments if you want mayonnaise on there.
Right.
You know, like, start going through all those, the lettuce. It's all different farmers, and it's all coming from all these different areas. And it's just, like, investing in those people so that they make the product the best you possibly can, and to have it the most nutritious you can possibly have too, right? Like, mm-hmm. think about that. Like, how much nutrition is lost by, you know, not ripening things and not getting them to the right state. So,
yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if this is the right place to talk about it, but really briefly, you know, the other thing that people have to keep in mind, or I hope people do, or make sure that they're aware of, I'm going to use Walmart as an example, because I don't think that Walmart is ever going to advertise on our show, nor are we interested in getting them as an advertiser.
You think so? They may sue us now.
No. But I'm going to use them as an example, as just that they are so preoccupied and concerned with delivering everything they can at the cheapest price. Their whole business model is to undercut everyone around them.
Right.
It's not a bad model. I'm not calling it down. Every business has to exist on some model. They've chosen that to be theirs.
Right.
But what that means is every corner that can be cut will be cut. Right. And anything they can do to prolong the life of the thing that's on that shelf, they will do. Versus, you know, if we look at the people around us that, you know, maybe they took a little bit of extra time, or maybe they, instead of getting cheap labor, they were using some local people, or right. maybe, you know, like, I guess what I'm driving at is, yes, flavor comes with a cost, but it's still being delivered to you as cheap as possible. It's a highly competitive market. Even with your local farmers, they're still getting it to you as cheap as you possibly can. The difference is what your dollar's doing, you know, what you're supporting, what you're helping, what you're saying, this is what matters. You don't say, hey, this is what matters, I need to save 22 cents on a thing of mushrooms at Walmart. You know, you say, yeah, I'll pay the extra 22 cents and let my community know that I care about it and support it, because I need it to be here, because I need these great, you know, products. Well,
I love that point that you're saying, just like that surrounding area. How do we monopolize on it? How do we get the most out for ourselves?
Yeah.
And yeah, we can save a buck
importing
it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that import thing is getting more and more expensive every year. So that investment within your own community brings that price down.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just look at when the farmers market started in this community, mm-hmm. and it was like, as a chef going in there, I'm like, I can't afford to pay these prices and put it on the plate. And I think a lot of people don't realize that restaurants pay the same price as you're paying.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they do get a little bit better discount by buying in bulk because they buy 100 pounds instead of 10 pounds.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, if you go into Costco, a lot of restaurants are going in there because it's better prices there than what they get through distributors. So, you know, you're looking at those costs and then you look at your community costs. And, I find, too, like buying through my local farmers, the little add-ons they throw in there.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, you buy 2 pounds of lettuce, but maybe it's 2.5 pounds of lettuce that it comes to it.
Right.
You know, and it's cleaned, ready to go. And so, that's one of the other subjects that points I'd like to get onto, but I thought we'd take just a little break and then maybe we can talk a little bit about how to connect farmers and chefs.
Sure. You know, after the break, I got a quick point about what you're talking about there. We'll get to that.
All right. Sounds good. Whew. All right, Darren.
Welcome back.
We're back again.
And before we took that break, I was wanting to talk really briefly about, you had said that sometimes... when you're dealing with local versus something, some say larger operation, you're dealing with your local farmer, you get that little extra and it could be an extra half pound or you get an extra something or something new they're trying out. They're just throwing it out. But another thing that I've found is that you get to talk to them and they get feedback from you as to what people are looking for. And they can give you feedback based on what they've heard about you and your product. Also, they are part of a network. If this farmer is around, either you're part of a network or they're part of a network. But as long as one of you knows one other person other than the two of you, you've started a network.
Right.
And it grows from there. You know, I'm thinking in terms, I don't want to necessarily name names, but... You know, let's say Pat, who you still deal with and you dealt with at the restaurant we both worked at. You dealt with her at the business that we used to own together. You know, she has fantastic eggs, reliable, fantastic, great tasting eggs.
Right.
But from there, from that relationship, I've seen other things spin out of that. Either you guys both talking about a certain person, you're like, oh yeah, oh, that's right, I should talk to that person.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or same thing, vice versa. Oh, I was talking to so-and-so. Do you mind? And she'll say, do you mind if I give them your number? Or I said that they should contact you. You know, and that network starts where now you're sourcing another local product, or maybe not a local product. Maybe you're sourcing another product that you didn't have access to beforehand.
Right.
Right. And I just feel like that making that initial contact starts a network.
Well, you know, and that's something I would really like to talk about right now, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we should move on to that is like, how do you connect? How do farmers and chefs connect?
Okay.
As I'm taking my two fingers
exactly.
And bumping
that
them into.
First, I mean, yeah, you and I have been in the industry for so long, it just seems second nature. But how does somebody brand new to it, how do they make that?
How do they make that first connection?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's really sticking your neck out and actually introducing yourself and making that moment to go out and say, hi, I'm so-and-so from here.
Right.
And
if you're the chef, what do you recommend? How does that person make that?
Well, you know what? It's definitely, well, and that's it. Like chefs don't get out very much.
Right.
Right. Like, and it's very hard to connect with a chef. Because they're usually very quite busy. And the same thing with a farmer, because they don't give much of a time. So I always recommend, it's always nice to make a physical connection. So coming at it from a farmer's aspect is going into the restaurant and connecting with the chefs and themselves and bringing some product and saying, hey, I've got this, this, and this. Would you like to try some? Or do you use these? You know, and... I always bring up the thing is that I have a lot of farmers that are like, what can I grow for you?
Right.
And I like to turn it back on them and like, what do you grow really well?
Right.
You know, like what is the product you feel really confident about that you feel you have a good market for?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that gives me ability to look at, hey, how can I make this that I know you're you're really excited mm-hmm. about. How do I incorporate that into my menu to make it
right
interesting to the customer?
Right.
So that's one way I kind of look at that. And like,
but if you are going to show up, if you're cold calling,
if
you've not talked to the chef beforehand or the restaurant beforehand and you're showing up with your wares, don't show up at a busy time.
Well, and this is what I was going to say. This goes along with, too, if you're applying for a job at a restaurant.
Yes.
Because Darren has seen this, that you walk into the restaurant on your lunch break at lunchtime.
Yeah, at noon.
When there's a lineup of 50 people trying to get a table or get a menu or order something.
The entire restaurant is geared towards getting all this lunch people in and out on their lunch break.
Exactly. Everything's at full tilt and you're like, hi, my name is so-and-so. Yeah. And so here's my potatoes or here's my resume. This is my favorite. And I've seen the hostess take a resume and drop it in the garbage can as the person walks out the door.
Absolutely.
Because you obviously don't know what's going on.
and more so can't. It's okay to walk in not knowing, but if you can't read the situation and realize that it's inappropriate, then there's not a lot of faith there.
So a little bit is making a pre-phone call and saying, hey, this is who I am. Would it be all right if I drop by at a certain time?
Yeah.
I always recommend between services. So
I was going to say, if it was me, I would recommend 10 o'clock-ish a.m.
Yeah.
Or 2:30-ish in the afternoon.
Yeah, 2:30, 3 o'clock-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that. Usually up to 4 o'clock, maybe 4:30, you're okay, because around 4:30, 5 o'clock, that's when the dinner rush starts building.
Or exactly.
They're trying to get ready.
Yeah.
Just make that initial, go in there and say, hey, this is who I am. It'd be nice to see what you guys use here and what you'd be interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And from, if a chef is finding that nobody's coming to them, and trying to deliver product or trying to get them to try out product, and they're just like, I just don't know how to meet these people. I mean, aside from possibly, say, going to your local farmer's market.
I'm going to say. And that's how I got Blaine into food, is that we're like, let's go to the farmer's market.
Right.
Go to the farmer's market and go to each booth and say, hey, I'm the chef at this place.
Yeah.
What do you have for this?
Right.
This is what I use. How much do you produce of this? Yeah. I'm interested in it.
Right.
And they're going to say, well, it doesn't grow here very well. Mm-hmm. Or, oh my God, I've got buckets of it and I've been throwing it in the compost because I can't do anything with
it. Right.
So, there is that out there. And there's so much product out there that...
Absolutely.
But, it's...
Yeah. And if you can't make it to the farmer's market, zero in on one farmer. Or from one farm,
checking go out there. Out a farm stands,
just go there, check it out, see what's, see if you can strike up a conversation with the whomever to try to initiate that networking.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, we're lucky in the world right now because we have stuff like the internet and phones and all this way to make these initial things. I mean, it's always good to do a little bit of research beforehand before you go into a place and you're like, hi, I want to sell you fresh tomatoes. And we're like, we're a fish and chip shop.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't make our own ketchup. So,
There's
those opportunities and sort of learning what everyone's doing and sort of focusing on all that fun stuff out there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is sometimes I can think of most recently, I went out to a local farm that's quite a distance for me. It's about 45 minutes from my house. And I went there with the expectation to talk to them because I have a small food business. Mm-hmm. I was trying to make that transition to start using a local product versus something that I had to be bringing in. And I hadn't done my research and they were shut down for a few weeks on purpose. Like they'd shut down for holidays.
Right.
Which I had done the basic research, I would have saved myself an hour and a half of driving there and back. But, it reminds me of the podcast where a lot of our connections are made about guests via email or leaving a message on their machine. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that a chef and a farmer are going to lead completely different hours than what 90% of the people are used to. So it might take a couple extra days than you think. That you probably haven't been forgotten or pushed aside. They've just got to work their schedule and then get back to you when they can.
Yeah. No, and you know what? I have to really appreciate things like, you know, social media and internet and emails and texting. Because I found that's how I connect with local chefs a lot more.
Right.
And so I know a lot of farmers that I have they'll send me out. And some they do it all every which way. I get some on Messenger on my Facebook thing saying, "Hey John, this is my fresh sheet for the week, and I've got this, and I've got this, and I've got this. Are you interested in any of it?"
Right.
And then I've got some people just write it on a piece of paper and take a picture of it.
Yeah,
this is that simple. I have other people who type it out and then they send it to me. And then I literally will go through and I'll just cut and paste. I'll literally be like, no, I don't want that. I don't want that. Delete, delete, delete. And I'll take 10 pounds of that, 10 pounds of that, 10 pounds of that.
Right.
And so it's sort of knowing that it is a little bit more difficult than, you know, like you have your set systems of this, how much you buy. Mm-hmm. And that with a farmer, you've got more ability to manipulate and sort of cut those. If you only need 15 pounds of something,
right,
you can buy just 15 pounds instead of the 30 pound case that you're going to save a dollar.
Right. Yeah.
But you're still losing 15 pounds. So,
yeah.
So that's what I find is easier with a farmer. And you know what? Sometimes they don't always have that product. So it's having that couple days lead notice, and things can change really quick on a farm too. Right. So
absolutely.
I know I've had arugula that came in the first week and it was beautiful. And I was like, okay, this is great. I'll take another 10 pounds of that. And then it came in and of course something had gotten into it and there was holes through it all. So
oh,
it's
no.
like, you know, oh, well that's a product that you know what, if you're having a salad and there's like animals have eaten through it, it's not really the same experience, right?
No.
So something yet too, in the other way is that same product can be made into a pesto. You know, it's not that it's
absolutely
it's a bad product, but it's just been damaged in some way. So
there's
always, and as a chef, that's part of our job is to be able to not waste food, and how do I take something that's been damaged and process it into something that's flavorful. So, you know, you don't need a perfect tomato to make tomato sauce.
No. Well, case in point, I think last week you had a couple of cases of peaches, and some of those peaches were in rough shape, but you're just essentially pulping them to turn them into ice cream or sorbet.
Right.
So, like, you don't need a beautiful peach. If you'd had, say, a full restaurant, you're going to save those beautiful peaches for something that's going on the plate.
Yeah, exactly.
But when it comes, you know, exactly.
Like, if I'm doing a bruleed peach or something like that, or a nice roasted, peach pie of some sort, then, I want the nicer ones. But if I'm just pureeing it, I'm looking for flavor. I'm not looking for beauty.
So that's one of the ways, I mean, I think that was one of the points that you wanted to bring up today was we were talking about waste and that, their rate there is something that a chef has to be concerned with is how to rein in waste and how do we make sure that, whether it's your restaurant or somebody else's that you're running for them, bottom dollar, you know, bottom line there, you got to always be watching out for it. But not just that, I mean, You don't want to be we're not in the 80s anymore. You can't be a restaurant that has just literally tons and tons of waste. You know, there's a responsibility there now, an expectation of responsibility that you are doing your best to reduce waste.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm looking at now is like my biggest thing and ambition is cutting down on my plastic use.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the little steps that I've taken around kitchens to do that. Like, and maybe some of them aren't as I'm cutting down on plastic, but like all my containers have proper lids for them. So I'm not saran wrapping everything.
Right. Which is very common in the industry.
Well, and because everything has to be sealed and covered. That is food safe 101. If it's not sealed and covered, the contaminants can get in it and people can get sick.
Right.
So there's a point to that. So it's like making sure I have a lid that I don't have to saran wrap everything.
Right.
You know, spending that couple extra dollars, but it's something that, okay, maybe I spent $100 on lids for all my containers in the shop, but now I'm not spending $50.
Well, no, you're putting you're not putting reams of plastic in the garbage every year.
And that's a cost there too, right?
Right.
So
yeah.
I know this is a little off subject from connecting chefs to farmers, but
no, I think we were talking about waste, and you know, I think that the fact that from a chef's end, there's ways to minimize waste. What about from, you know, let's say from the farmer's end, although neither of us are farmers, one of the things that I think of in waste reduction for a farmer is having that relationship with your farmer. Having that relationship where they know that you're really good at turning a product, maybe it's specifically just a few things, but they know that you're really handy in the kitchen or deft, where you can take something that's about to go or only has a couple of good days left right. in it, and you can make something out of it that's fantastic. So they come to you and say, I've got this, and I really have nowhere else to turn. Like, this is going to be compost if I don't get something done with this. And you, as again, using the same word, deft, you as a chef that just knows how to be nimble and roll with the punches and say, oh, I can do this with that.
Mm-hmm.
I can turn this into that kind of a sauce, or I can turn this into, I can do a quick, you know, an overnight preserve on it and serve it as garnish for the next week. Or
I was talking to a chef the other day, and the perfect opportunity was this. It was from, he got green strawberries.
Okay.
They were from Grace at Blades Beach, who we've had on the show before.
Yeah.
And he took those and he made them into a relish and put it on top of his burgers.
Oh my God, that'd be great.
Right?
Right.
But like, she was like, I've got all these green strawberries and I can't do anything with them. And he was like, I will take them.
Right.
And that brings a point to the other point, I think, that we talked about waste, but promoting and building your brand.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that farmers really miss out on is branding themselves. And chefs are very good at branding people. And I don't know where I'm coming from this exactly, but I just know as myself as a chef, it's like taking a name of a product and running it through my restaurant and selling their name, then you know, that promotes their business and it draws business to them. And I've seen a lot of businesses over the years that I've brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's just me, it's their own hard work and networking all these people. But in my restaurant, they were coming in there and I'd have 200-300 people a day coming through, reading that menu and reading that name.
Right.
And being like, oh, so that's where I go get the lettuce from. Oh, that's where I should get pork from. That's where I should get my chicken from. And so just that connection all of a sudden builds your brand outside of the business, so that when you're, you know, at a farmer's market and you're like, oh, there's so-and-so, let's go check out.
Yeah.
Oh, I had that at the restaurant. That was delicious. I should get a couple of those for my house.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was on the front end, and absolutely, there were so many times when we did have things in the menu labeled by the farm that it came from. When people would ask more about that farm, they would say, oh, is this a reputable farm? Is that why you've got the name in here? Oh, yes. You know, they have fantastic products. That's why we're proud to have their name there.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. It's that brand building.
Yeah. And it's also as farmers having a focus on something, like sometimes your base ingredients, like the potatoes and the garlic, and they're not always like that standout thing, but having like that one thing that sort of stands out, that sort of like makes that dish unique, helps bring that connection to you. So
absolutely. Yeah. Any other points that you want to tackle this evening?
Oh, you know what? I have to put together a 5-minute speech about this.
My goodness. I think you going to be able to do it?
I think I'd be able to do it, but you may have to come with me. No, I should be fine. But I just wanted to throw a little plug out, because this comes back to the, as I did last year, the Soup Fest.
Okay.
Which we did the podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's happening again this Sunday, October 6th.
Wow.
At the Black Creek Community Center. And so there's going to be 8 chefs competing for the title of Best Soup.
Right.
I don't know if that's the actual title name, but I'm going to be up there.
Yeah.
And they've asked me to do a little talk about what is that connection between chefs and
And farmers.
And farmers. And I think
we kind of ran over some of that today.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited about this.
You've got some ammunition there for your presentation. Do you have, I guess it's too early to talk about what your soup's going to be.
It's a little early, but I've got a couple ideas. So right. Maybe in the next podcast, I'll give another little hint to where I'm going with that.
That's great.
Awesome.
And of course, in that next podcast, we'll probably have a little more information where people can get tickets, how, what time, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's do that for sure.
Okay.
Definitely. Okay. All right, Darren.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get going here, we're going to start something a little new. We want to have a little bit of interaction with our listeners out there.
Okay.
So this means you sitting at home.
Or in your car listening to this podcast.
As most of us do, or walking down the street with the headphones set in.
Sure.
Because that's my favorite way to listen to podcasts is just...
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we're talking about food questions. We're going to talk. We're going to address food questions. So I've got one. It came up. I was in your establishment the other day helping out.
Okay.
And somebody asked me, because you are Blue Spruce and you had a spruce tip ice cream, they were incredulous. They just couldn't put it all together. They were like, well, what's it actually made out of? And I said, well, it's made out of a custard ice cream and spruce tips. And they said, you can eat them? And where do you get them? So I thought that may be a good question to start off with for this week.
Oh, where do I get my spruce tips? Or sure. Where do people out there who get spruce tips? Or maybe even just to throw it out there to people, I'd love to hear back where they get their forage stuff from. Not like locations, but like some of those kind of interesting ingredients like the spruce tip.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can address her first part of the question.
Her first...
Which was, you can eat these?
You can eat the spruce tips, yeah. So it's like, it's the little bud just at the end of the spruce tree. And we're using the Sitka spruce because it's from here. I know we're called Blue Spruce.
Right.
And the Blue Spruce tree is located to more central North America than on the West Coast. So we're using the Sitka spruce. And it's just that little bud that comes out in the spring that just... That you
it's
see
got that brighter color.
Brighter color and starting to grow. And so we just clip those, and I actually freeze them off for the season.
Yeah.
And then pull them as I need them. And so we were lucky enough because we had our friends over at Clever Crow.
Right.
Who we had a staff
Amazing
party.
Amazing people.
And we took our entire staff over there. We picked as
many
spruce...
Oh, I didn't even think about that. They have like they've got like 5 acres out back.
Yeah. So we went and picked spruce tips in the couple trees they had there, and then they cooked us dinner. We had a nice little staff meal. And they
Brian
came
and
Leah
are just amazing.
Yeah.
So, I think that this is a great way of involving the listener. So maybe you can tell us if you're into spruce or if what have you. Maybe you can throw in your 2 cents.
Or anything you're into foraging. I'd love to hear some foraging stories of people.
For sure.
Of some fun things out there that they've found in the woods and tried that have been pretty amazing.
Absolutely. And if you, maybe you don't have any information, but you know what, maybe you've got a question. And if you want to, you can corner John or I when you see us walking on the street, or you can check out our, you know, email us or check out our Facebook.
Well, here's a good time to put out all those fun little email things.
Let's cover all those. What do we have? We have Edible Valley. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on,
At Podbean, our host
Absolutely.
Site for the podcast, as well as what else do we have? We have a WordPress site, which
we
is
do.
A little behind, but it's still out there with some pictures and a little bit more stories to go along with what we're doing here.
Yeah, and you can find any us on any of those by looking up Edible Valley. If you want to catch us directly, though...
shoot us an email to theediblevalley@gmail.com.
Great.
And that's probably the best way. And we're always interesting to hear from people. And we'd love to continue keeping the stories going.
I mean, really, that's the whole nature of the show, is we love to talk to people about food. So if you want to be one of those people, if you have a question, if you have anything, we love to talk about food.
All right. Well, thank you again for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.